Welcome to Truth Jihad Radio. I'm Kevin Barrett, exploring all of the most important issues you'll never hear about in the corporate mainstream or even the pseudo-alternative media. And that category now includes not only the foundation-funded left media, but also the pseudo-alternative media on the right. That would be Alex Jones, Breitbart, all of that stuff. It's pretty much all pseudo now, so you have to really pick and choose, and that's what we do here at Truth Jihad Radio. All right, well, speaking of the pseudo-left alternative media and the pseudo-right, they kind of meet over at RT. Well, RT, they have some good stuff every now and then, but they sure have been drinking the Trump Kool-Aid, and they're also drinking the 9/11 official story Kool-Aid. I've been banned from RT for being a truther, and I understand some other folks have been as well, but Max Blumenthal is welcome on RT, where he recently was on there pushing the official 9/11 story and vouching for Khalid Sheikh Mohammed as the mastermind of 9/11. This is a guy who was tortured into false confessions to everything pretty much since the Lindbergh baby kidnapping. And, well, there you have it, Max Blumenthal. What's going through his head to find out? Let's bring on my Max Blumenthal expert, and that is Greg McCarron from Kansas City. How are you doing, Greg?
I'm doing very good.
All right. Well, you've been in the truth movement for quite some time, and I think we discussed Max a while back, and now he's just really maxed out, as it were.
Yeah, for sure. We discussed him in the context of the of his comments directed towards former truth activists who has gone, you know, moved on to, I guess, other avenues of activism, which are worthwhile but are also more lucrative and profitable as far as a career in alternative media goes, that being Abby Martin. But we went into the history of some of Max's inflammatory and disrespectful comments towards people in the truth movement, as well as his work in kind of gatekeeping and pushing the official government Western media narrative on Syria and shaming anybody who opposes the or who questions the narrative surrounding Bashar al-Assad and the regime in Syria. But most recently, just a couple of days ago, this past Thursday, actually, Blumenthal went on RT America to discuss a letter that was recently revealed from allegedly from Khalid Sheikh Mohammed to former President Obama, and it was, I guess he wrote it in 2015, we're supposed to believe, and that it was to be disclosed just before he left office, and now it's coming out, and the KSM very conveniently cited the Israeli massacre in Gaza in summer of 2014 as like the reason why things like September 11th happened. So Max Blumenthal went on RT to talk about this this letter that KSM allegedly wrote and used it as to push the blowback theory. Because things like this happen because of what we do in other countries. And I find it particularly deceptive for a couple of reasons. And first of all is the fact that Max Blumenthal runs a blog on the Alternet website, which is devoted to Islamophobia. Meanwhile, when it comes to the root cause or the main driving force behind Islamophobia here in the West, that being the September 11th attacks and the continued belief and the continued belief amongst the majority of the population that we could even question whether or not it's the majority of the population, but amongst the where it really matters, this idea, the continued belief that Muslims were responsible for the September 11th attack. But when you talk about that, yet you're supposed to be so devoted to Islamophobia, you belittle and attack and criticize and want nothing to do with the people who are actually trying to really fight Islamophobia by clearing Muslims of the crime of the century, so to speak, that has caused all of this, the last 15 years of endless war in the Middle East, made wars that otherwise would have been nearly impossible to sell to the public, like the Iraq War, and the continued just ongoing, just covert and overt acts of war going on in the Middle East ever since. And to me, it's a big problem when you're promoting Islamophobia, but you go on television and other media outlets and promote this official narrative that keeps Islamophobia alive, and I think he's sophisticated enough to understand that. The other reason it matters is that he's going on about Israel's crimes and citing Israel's crimes in Gaza as a justification for September 11th, but he completely runs cover for Israel when it comes to really their biggest crime of all, the crime that could do the most to influence the thinking of the country that supports Israel more than any other, and that's the United States of America.
Absolutely. Well, one thing that really strikes me about these blowback theory people is their complete ignorance or refusal to listen to what Muslims actually think, which in this case, of course, is that the polls all show that two-thirds of American Muslims and more than three-quarters of Muslims worldwide know that 9/11 was an inside job. And even if Max Blumenthal, just for the sake of argument, let's say maybe he doesn't know that, he's somehow he just hasn't looked into it or whatever, even so, just essentially ignoring the views of Muslims and then pretending to be endorsing Muslims and being against Islamophobia, even as he essentially silences the real viewpoint of Muslims, this is totally absurd and obnoxious. And that goes not just for Max Blumenthal, but for everybody who endorses the blowback theory. And then the other aspect that is so annoying about this is that he's ignoring or pretending to ignore the actual strategic implications of the whole scenario. That is, one of the reasons, among many, that Muslims believe 9/11 was an inside job is that, obviously, the strategic import of 9/11 was terrible for anti-imperialist Muslims. Just like Pearl Harbor was terrible for Japan, right? Indeed, the top German leaders admitted that they could have easily won World War II if they'd had a Pearl Harbor to motivate their people. So, strategically, 9/11 was an utter and complete disaster for the Muslim world, but it was a victory for those who want to wage a war on Islam. And Muslims all know that. And I think Max Blumenthal should be smart enough to know that, too. Should be. Also, the other people who promote the blowback theory should know that. They should know that huge attacks on civilians simply rile up the population, and you know, they don't work strategically. What works strategically, of course, is things like the suicide bombings were working quite well, whatever you may think of them morally, against the Israeli occupation forces before 9/11. But then 9/11 allowed Israel to utterly crush the Palestinian resistance, build the wall, etc., etc. So these are the things that are ignored by people like Blumenthal, and it really makes you wonder just whose side is he really on?
Yeah, for sure. You know, it strikes me he's definitely not stupid enough to not get it. I mean, we can play devil's advocate, but my gut tells me that he understands and knows the consequences of September 11th and what really happened. You know, he goes on RT and he cites how KSM was waterboarded, 183 times, yet he still takes this letter, this alleged letter at face value, and takes everything that's in the official version of the story at face value. Of course, unless it blames Saudi Arabia, then it's okay to talk about that, because that really doesn't infringe upon the official 9/11 fairy tale. But I mean, they definitely understand, and I think at a time the strategic consequences of it, because you can go on all day. This is what I've realized, and this is one of the flaws of like a Noam Chomsky, who in his correspondence with you was saying that it doesn't do anything to get, like, it's not going to accomplish anything going on about these events like September 11th, but when in reality going on and on about the consequences of imperialism and the crimes that America, U.S. government, military have committed against so many countries in the world, as terrible as it is, as important as it is to understand, it doesn't accomplish anything. And continuing to go on about what the U.S. is doing and its allies are doing in this part of the world, as terrible as it is, that's not going to get the American people really in a mass, like, sort of anger, understanding, and righteous indignation against what we're doing in that part of the world. But understanding the truth about that our country was attacked by elements within our own government and, of course, our biggest allies, that will wake people up. That will get people outraged. And especially in the era of Trump, when we're under a very, very big potential threat of another major false flag attack in the Trump administration, and the continued reliance on pushing the official September 11th narrative, that combined with Trump having multiple relationships, both personally and within people with his inner circle, with numerous September 11th criminals, particularly the financial element of 9/11, which we're not allowed to talk about because we're anti-Semitic, because that gets too close to the Israeli involvement. It's particularly dangerous now in the age of Trump to continue pushing this lie. At one point, you could say, well, maybe it's understandable, but at this point, there's no excuse to be pushing the official narrative if you're an honest enough person to look at the facts that are available.
That's right. And then there's that issue of torture. You know, essentially anybody who supports the official version of 9/11 is committing a war crime by accepting tortured testimony. And that goes double for anybody like Max Blumenthal, who is basing their endorsement of the official fairy tale of 9/11 on this tortured testimony by explicitly referring to Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the supposed mastermind, and his confession that was elicited by torture. And he did confess to many, many other crimes as well that he couldn't possibly have committed, including crimes that were committed after he was already incarcerated. And in fact, the way they got Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was by torturing Abu Zubaydah, who was a mentally retarded man who couldn't possibly have had any serious involvement in Al-Qaeda or anything else. And so this whole thing is clearly about the real use of torture, which is, there's only one use for torture, really, and that is to elicit false confessions for propaganda purposes. And that's what the U.S. learned when it studied the torture that American troops had suffered in North Korea during the Korean War. They discovered that that's what torture was all about, essentially brainwashing people and turning them into propaganda mouthpieces who will say whatever the torturers want them to say. And that's precisely the program that was taken from these U.S. military torture programs based on North Korean torture, all of it admittedly torture for false confessions for propaganda purposes, and then applied to those so-called 9/11 criminals. And anybody who endorses this process by saying that, yeah, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed is really the mastermind and these 19 guys really did it, just like KSM admitted in the testimony while he was being tortured, that person has then become complicit in this war crime of torture. And so Max Blumenthal needs to be reminded that he's committing a war crime by doing this.
Yeah, and it's amazing how the whole operation works. It goes from the people like Giuliani and Michael Mukasey, among others, who of course were two of the people that were involved in drafting up this executive order banning immigration from these majority Muslim countries. Giuliani and on Fox News, they were two of the biggest advocates going on television saying, we can't have these 9/11 criminals tried in a court of law because they're a national security threat. Meanwhile, Blumenthal and other progressives who, you know, apparently they claim to want Guantanamo Bay closed and they claim to want justice for these men, for these people who have been tortured at this facility. And meanwhile, they continue to uphold this official narrative by, I mean, that directly, it also directly impacts their chances of coming to the U.S. and getting tried for, and getting justice, because as long as people have no reason to believe that they're not criminally responsible for the attacks of September 11th, they can continue to use this justification that they're a national security threat because they'll be plotting another attack while they're being held at a prison waiting for trial. So, I mean, Blumenthal and others are aiding the aiding that element of the narrative as well when it gets into the whole purpose of Guantanamo Bay and the military prison there and keeping the alleged 9/11 criminals from having a voice and having a chance to have their day of justice in a court of law when you continue to assert that they were responsible for the crime.
All right, well, we're going to have to leave it there because that's the end of the rather all too brief first segment of today's Truth Jihad Radio show. I'll be back in a bit with Richie Allen. Well, really, I appreciate your great work, Greg McCarron. Keep it up and keep an eye on that Max Blumenthal, and we'll bring you back to talk about whatever. Hopefully not Max anymore. I'm getting tired of him. But I appreciate your excellent insights, so we'll talk to you soon.
The academic of serious notes, multilingual. We'll be here all day talking about him. Terrific broadcaster. You can find him on Twitter, seeing as most of our comments are coming in on Twitter. His Twitter handle even is @TruthJihad. That is @TruthJihad. Always a genuine pleasure to welcome back to the program our friend Kevin Farris. Kev, welcome back. How are you?
I'm well, Richie. Thank you. Good to be with you.
Good to be with you. we probably could do a 2 or 3 hours here today, you and I, but we've got 45 minutes or thereabouts, 40 minutes. Let's jump straight in there. What's going on with the so-called independent media? What will it take Donald Trump to do before these people accept that they've been had again? Now, I must point out, our mutual friend, cantankerous and all as he is, but we love him, James H. Fetzer, said to me today, I am very upset. This is Jim Fetzer. I will denounce the apparent continuation of the neocon agenda. I am very upset. I appreciate his humility, but he's on his own, Kev, because no matter what Trump does, the so-called independent media, supposedly the war against tyranny, the front lines of the war against tyranny, the front lines of the information war, are supporting this neocon Zionist lunatic who is inhabiting the White House now. What's going on?
Well, Richie, I'm really glad to hear that Jim Fetzer is starting to climb down from that very high and precarious perch that he mounted a while back, singing the praises of Trump. It reminds me a lot of what happened back in 2008 when Jim and so many other people believed Barack Obama's promises that he was bringing hope for change and everything would change now that we had this totally unlike George W. Bush guy in the White House. A lot of my friends, people around me, felt that way, voted for Obama, and became gradually disillusioned. But with Trump, frankly, Richie, I'm not sure how anybody even got fooled for a minute. You know, just the guy's demeanor is very... you don't have to watch him talk for very long to notice that there's something really wrong with this guy, and nothing he says really makes a lot of sense. Nothing coherent there. So anyway, long story short here, is that I expected that people like Jim Fetzer would once again recognize that they had been had by Donald Trump, and so far not a whole lot have. So good for Jim.
Good for Jim is absolutely right. I've invited Jim to come back on with me next week and have a chat about it. He's genuinely distressed about it, I think, Jim. Jim is obviously incredibly intelligent. I think, though, you know, Jim's background, he was in the Marines, and I think there's always a part of people like Jim that want to hang on to just that little bit of belief that the means to change things can be found at the ballot box. And, you know, and maybe in 4 years' time, God love Jim, and I don't mean to patronize him because he's incredibly intelligent and he's very important, Jim. But in 4 years' time, God love me, he might be endorsing somebody else. And this is the problem. Is Donald Trump creating an autocracy? Or I'll ask you a better question than that, Kevin. Is Trump being used by the elite to create an autocracy for presidents to come and for presidents forevermore? I'm talking about him basically trying to, with the stroke of a pen, remove the judiciary from process, annihilate the Constitution, put himself in a position where he needs to deal with nobody. He doesn't have to speak with anybody. If he decrees it, therefore it is, therefore it must become law. So that seems like Trump, but is there something else going on behind the scenes? Is he being used to lay the groundwork for basically an autocracy of the future?
I think so, Richie. You know, it's not just Trump, of course. We've had this federalist society dominating the American judiciary for many, many years, and they are dedicated to a kind of a neoconservative reading of the U.S. Constitution, which in a way is actually not just misreading it, but kind of shredding it. You know, these people basically think that the nation needs a kind of a Führer, or you know, somebody who's above the law. And this follows the political philosophy of Carl Schmitt, who was the number one Nazi philosopher, and his top disciple, and even a more radical disciple, was Leo Strauss, the founder of neoconservatism. Schmitt said that the ideal state to govern in is the state of emergency, because then you don't have all of the parliamentary wrangling and all of the give and take and discussion in the kind of a democratic system where it's messy and it's really hard to unite people in service to a great project. So Schmitt said that, you know, the great projects are all basically war, that politics is the science of enmity, that is, uniting people in hatred of an other. And in order to do that well, you really need to install a state of emergency and abolish the democratic, parliamentary, and republican procedures and have a leader or a Führer. And this is why he was the number one Nazi political philosopher, and he's still maybe the most influential political philosopher of the past century. The neocons totally embraced him by way of Leo Strauss. So they're very dedicated to destroying the foundations of the Enlightenment in terms of democracy and these checks and balances. And Trump is really almost the perfect guy with his out-of-control ego and his serious case of narcissism and borderline sociopathy. This is the guy who will be very, very happy to install a state of emergency when the time comes. We've already got a state of emergency that's wiped out 90% of the Constitution, inherited from the 9/11 false flag operation. So I'm wondering if they're going to do something similar to Trump Tower. They're going to blow up Trump Tower the way they blew up the Twin Towers in Building 7, and that will go after Trump's narcissistic sort of phallic obsession, and he will be outraged, but the country will be in a state of shock, so it would go along with him as he finished off what's left of the Constitution. This is really my great concern, and I just hope that the American people and the media will be awake if and when that happens.
And you know, Kevin, and the reason I've loved speaking to you since we began talking in 2008-2009, these conversations, they segue off into different avenues and corridors. You've got me thinking there about, there's a new television series, or relatively new, it's on Netflix, Kiefer Sutherland again. This time he's the president. The entire cabinet and all the Senate and Congress has been killed, and he's the president. And again, it's Islamic terror. And I wonder how many of these TV series, and we've seen films like that, DC Must Fall, or I can't remember the name of the film, there's been two, London Is Falling, Washington Is Falling, whatever it's called, all these scenarios, how much are people being prepared for these types of future false flag attacks, like you described there, one of Trump's big buildings getting blown to pieces, some of Trump's staff being murdered, and then that state of emergency you described, which was the atmosphere, of course, 15 years ago, wasn't it, Kevin, when the Patriot Act, which couldn't be any more unpatriotic, what an incredibly, again, Huxley-esque or Orwellian document and set of laws that was. But people acquiesced to it because we're under attack and these lunatics can kill us at any time. That's what's going on here. It's an absolute assault on the senses of American men and women, from the media, from everywhere, right?
Absolutely right, Richie. And Trump is surrounded with some of the kinds of people we would expect if that's what he's planning to do. Steve Bannon, who seems to be his Karl Rove, maybe more, is absolutely dedicated to trying to have essentially a World War III style clash of civilizations with the Islamic world. Bannon is a fanatical sort of Christian Zionist holy warrior. He went to the Vatican and he said that, you know, we need to have this, you know, all out kind of fight against Islam, so he's ready to go. And some of these other people around Donald Trump, like his own son-in-law Kushner, who's close to Bibi Netanyahu, as many of these people are. Newt Gingrich has the same kind of attitude. Friedman, this ambassador he appointed to Israel, is even more radical than Bibi Netanyahu. So it looks to me like Trump is pretty much a puppet of the ultra-extremist Zionist faction connected to Netanyahu, and those are precisely the people who did 9/11, and they're probably just about ready to do another one.
And you look at, again, just jumping two different issues, but they're all the same issue, of course. All the dots are all connected here. You know, Trump is in, he's in a few days, and Netanyahu announces a massive settlement expansion plan again. I mean, it doesn't get any more sickening or any more illegal, morally wrong. You can use any adjective you want to describe it. We're going to tell a load of Palestinian men, women and children, we'll give you some money for your land, but there's no debate about it. You're going to get off your land and we're going to settle Israelis, Jewish people here. All of this in the early days of Trump's presidency. Not a word from anybody associated with Trump. Not a dicky bird, as we would say here in the UK, of condemnation of it. Which leads me to believe, Kevin, that I'm surprised I got it so badly wrong. Hillary was so disgusting and so evil. She seemed to be perfect to take the NATO plans, the NATO expansion around Russia further chaos, I believe she was going to be chosen to lead a ground invasion of Syria. All of that, and it should have occurred to me that Trump was the ringer. It was right there in front of us all along. He was the guy, and it never occurred to me. Is it safe to say now that sometime several years ago or a couple of years ago, they decided this is our guy, right?
It seems very likely to me, that's right. As far as the idea that maybe Trump was the peace president, which is, of course, what a lot of folks in the alternative media thought, and some of them still think, I think that illusion was created by political means precisely in order to get enough of a margin of voters to go for Trump to make it plausible that he could be inserted into the White House. If you look at who was really behind the clash with Russia, it hasn't been Obama and his people, or John Kerry, even Hillary, who was one of the more hawkish Democrats, but it was actually people around Victoria Nuland, who is an arch neoconservative and indeed Republican, married to the Kagan family, which family of sort of modern neoconservatism. And so these are the same people who are now surrounding Trump. And I think that those people engineered the crisis in Ukraine precisely to put pressure on Russia and create these very tensions that would then allow for the kind of situation where they could make Trump out to be a peace candidate, make it appear that he was friendly with Russia. But of course, the real problem, Rishi, isn't so much that Trump is friendly with Russia, it's that he's owned by Bibi Netanyahu through Mikhail Friedman. Mikhail Friedman is the ultimate Russian Jewish Zionist oligarch. You know, out of the seven, I think was it seven out of the eight original oligarchs who stripped the Soviet Union of all of its wealth when it collapsed, they were already pre-positioned by having organized crime over there, and so these people essentially took over the entire wealth of the Soviet Union in the hands of just, you know, seven, eight guys, and they were virtually all dual citizen Jewish Zionists. And then Putin came to power thanks to Friedman, one of these oligarchs, and this Mikhail Friedman used to deliver bags full of cash to Putin when Putin was mayor of Moscow. He basically owns Putin. He made Putin. Now, interestingly, Friedman had a server that was directly connected to the Donald Trump campaign server during the election campaign. So that connection with Moscow was actually a connection to Bibi Netanyahu by way of Netanyahu's close friend and associate, Mikhail Friedman.
Kevin, this is incredible stuff. Kevin has written a brilliant article for Veterans Today, published today, called The Zionist Christian Alliance and the Great Deception. Check it out. I'm going to tweet a link to it out now. Kevin is at Truth Jihad on Twitter. I'm following Kevin there. Follow Kevin. At Truth Jihad is Kevin on Twitter. Scott Creighton is on the program tomorrow night. He's written an absolutely fantastic article. Speaking of brilliant articles, he's written a fantastic article today about the Whopper. I've given up, Kevin. I used to try to at least maintain some level or levels of objectivity talking about this because of my commercial mainstream media background, but I can't anymore. The Amnesty International report yesterday and the cartoon that went with it, alleging that the Assad government and its army have murdered 13,000 people in the last few years and were hanging 50 at a time, two times a week, with such utter monumental bullshit. It's untrue. And Scott's written an unbelievably brilliant, detailed article and basically brought it down to, you know, that nobody was murdered in this way anyway by the Syrian government at Saidnaya prison since 2011, and basically showed that Amnesty were telling tall tales by claiming that their sources were human rights groups in Syria, which are not actually based in Syria, they're based here in the United Kingdom as well. I pointed out yesterday, a lot of people missed this, I was surprised because I'm no genius, you know, I'm just very good at research. Amnesty has been taking money from the UK and the US government since the mid-2000s. How in the name of Christ, excuse the blasphemy, could anybody believe that Amnesty is in any way impartial in making these claims against Syria? But he offered no evidence, Kev, none whatsoever. I leave anger to one side. Do you know what terrifies me? The ramping up of all this bullshit about Syria leads me to believe one or two things one of two things will happen. Thing one is they're going to partition Syria like Korea, or two, there's going to be a ground invasion. What do you think?
I hope it's none of the above, but it does look like things are headed in that direction. There's another area where Trump has not yet come through with the kinds of implicit campaign promises to reach a settlement. You know, he said that Assad wasn't such a bad guy, that he would work with Putin and this sort of thing. And yet, right as he assumed office, there was a conference over in Astana, Kazakhstan, and this was essentially all of the important players in this conflict, minus the people who shouldn't even be there in the first place, like NATO and the U.S. and Israel. So the important players, that would be Syria as number one by far, and then Russia and Iran and so on, and Turkey, these players were all set to actually come up with a solution. And rather than supporting that, as you would think that the new Trump administration would, U.S. policy has just continued as before. We're still throwing Humvees at ISIS, you know, the delivery to the so-called, you know, nice Syrian rebels. Of a huge shipment of these armored vehicles went through well after Trump was in office and right after this Astana conference. And those armored vehicles, of course, are not going to be held by any friendly rebels. They're going straight to ISIS and al-Nusra. And so we're not seeing any executive orders from Trump stopping the arming of ISIS. He even said that Obama created ISIS. Well, why doesn't he end ISIS by ending American support for ISIS? Well, I guess that's not on his agenda.
It's certainly not on his agenda, or the people who control him on their agenda either. You say, Kev, that you hope none of the above is the scenario, but it's inevitable, Kevin, isn't it? Because Russia have managed to put a massive wrench in the machine, in the wheels of the neocon Zionist lunatic plan for Syria. That's what Russia have done. Now listen, guys like you and me, I think the similarity we have is there's no bullshit here. We know that oligarchs are bad. We know that Vladimir Putin is not a nice guy. We know the KGB are not nice people. We know that basically in any country, no matter what it is, Russia or Greece or anywhere, you have corruption, you have tyranny. That's the way it is. But you got to call it the way it is. Russia, whatever the internal machinations, whatever the internal problems with their politics are not a threat to global security and to the peace on planet Earth. They are not, however much of a scumbag Putin might be, and I've got problems with him. You got to be honest about that. And you know, opposition leader being done for embezzlement today, that smells a bit as well. Let's be honest about it. I don't know. Now, he might be dirty, he might be, but it smells a bit. You got to call it the way it is. Russia have done what they've done, quite rightly, to protect their own interests, and it's helped, thank God, the Assad government from being overrun by the Wahhabi nutters and eventually the imposition of a US puppet in Syria. But because of that, Kevin, because there's no way the US, Israeli, French, British criminals are going to get their way in Syria, they can only choose one of the above: partition the country, or say we can't let him continue to hang innocent people, Kev, therefore we've got to go in. And I hate to say it, sometime this year, mate, or even into early 2018, it's going to be one or the other, in my opinion.
Well, I think a de facto partition is pretty much already there in certain respects. As far as actually sending in U.S. or Western ground troops, that's always possible. I mean, I would hope not, but, you know, that very likely would lead to World War III, as Russia and Iran are not going to stand for that. The real aim here, though, of course, is not to really own Syria or control Syria and impose some kind of pro-Western stability on Syria. This is the propaganda line they keep feeding us. That's what they said they were going to do in Iraq. They were going to stabilize Iraq and make it a happy democratic system and a country that loved Israel, and they would welcome us with flowers and all this stuff. But, of course, the real purpose of the Iraq War was to utterly and completely destroy Iraq as a functioning modern country with technology and education, because such a country threatens Israel. So they've poisoned it with depleted uranium. Babies are being born with horrific deformities all over the country. The Israeli Mossad went in there and murdered, through assassination, the top 200 or 300 Iraqi scientists. in a kind of an intellectual genocide to make sure that Iraq would never come back and be a country that could threaten Israel. They've also destroyed a number of other countries. Libya is the obvious one. That country is just busted up into pieces now. A bunch of warlords pretty much run it. Sudan has had its resource-rich south split off. It's occupied by Israeli interests that are stripping it of its resources in the south, and it's, of course, the situation for the innocent civilians who were in bad shape before is even worse now, but you never hear about it because all of that human rights propaganda about Sudan was all designed to destroy Sudan and make it even worse. The game plan here, Richie, is for the Zionists to destroy every country in the region that could have any possibility of posing a threat to Israel 10, 20, 30, 50 years down the line. That's what this is really about. They've basically admitted it. General Clark told us that 9/11 was all about destroying seven countries in 5 years. A little bit behind schedule, but not that much.
Absolutely. And if anybody wants any proof, look at the Israeli flag from the Euphrates to the Nile. It's right there in front of you. You know, and people can say whatever they want. I couldn't give a damn. It's the truth. My friend Terry Howell in Salford has reminded you and I that a film tipped to do very well in the Oscars is a film called Patriot Day, starring Kevin Bacon, based on the Boston bombing. Kevin, whenever I hear about the Boston bombing, and whenever I hear about this particular film, my blood boils with rage, because I interviewed the director of several television series and a couple of low-budget films who knew one of the crisis actors who was involved in the so-called Boston bombing, which is the absolute, in my opinion anyway, it's the definition of a hoax, that, where nobody was hurt, where everybody purporting to be injured or hurt was actually playing a part. Now, I don't know about other so-called hoaxes. I think Sandy Hook is, you know, an absolute ringer as well. But films like that, Kevin, this is how they're getting to people. This is how they're selling this common agenda, isn't it? You know, reminding people that there are people hanging around street corners, hell-bent on blowing themselves up and killing you as well. And they're rewriting history with films like Patriot Day. These films are going straight to the top of the box office charts. They're in every cineplex and multiplex in the country. And people are walking out of those cinemas and they've been brainwashed, right? How do you counter that, Kev? What do you do about that?
Well, I've been trying to counter this stuff since I woke up to 9/11 being an inside job back in 2003. And I could use some help from people with serious money and media reach. It's amazing that, you know, there's basically only been one guy with serious money who ever tried to spread the truth about 9/11. And that was Jimmy, what's his name? My mind is losing Jimmy's last name, right? Jimmy Walter, yeah, Jimmy Walter. And, you know, he bought full-page ads in the New York Times and the Washington Post, and then suddenly he was getting terrible threats, and his home was attacked and vandalized, and he ended up having to flee the country and withdrawing from the 9/11 truth fight. So maybe that's why none of these Silicon Valley billionaires who were so worried about Trump founding a new Nazi Reich are actually going to do what it would take to stop that, which would be spreading the truth about these things. But you're right, Richie, I get furious whenever I see these Hollywood films, you know, Zero Dark Thirty and these various terror propaganda films that are way beyond anything that the Nazi propagandists ever dreamed of. And you're right, the Boston bombing obviously was a false flag. Whether anybody got hurt and how hurt, I'm not sure, but yeah, there are some indications that it might have been a theatrical production. In any case, the Tsarnaev brothers most certainly were innocent and convicted of a crime. Well, the younger brother was convicted of a crime he never could have committed, and we had other people murdered to keep it all hushed up, including Totoro, the friend of the older Tsarnaev brother, who was executed point blank with a shot to the head from, you know, right up against the skull from behind while he was in FBI custody. And that's a heck of a shot, you know, trying to escape kind of scenario. In fact, he was silenced, yeah. So the Boston bombing is a clearly a false flag atrocity, and just one more in a long list of false flag atrocities. So, Richie, why doesn't the alternative media get that they have brainwashed us into imagining that there's some kind of Islamic threat to the homeland when there is no such threat? If there were, they wouldn't have to invent all of these bogus terror...
No, they wouldn't. Do you know what, Kevin? When I used to go to school, my teachers used to cotton on very quick to the same lame old excuses. You know, the dog ate my essay. My mum accidentally threw my essay out with a pile of magazines. All that old bullshit. But my neighbours and my friends never seemed to tire of the same old story. We found a passport at the scene, and that led us to the suspect's, usually the deceased suspect's apartment. And in the apartment, Kev, we found all the plans for the attack. When will people get tired of the same bullshit story being told to them? Because it's not even, you know, it would be a joke if there were just some glaring similarities. It's not similarities. Every time one of these things happens, it is the exact same story. It was a loner. The police knew about him. He was a petty criminal. He was a loner. He left his passport at the scene. And then when we searched his apartment, I mean, Kevin, this attack at the Louvre, I can never say that properly, my missus would be ashamed of me, the Louvre Museum, this guy wearing an Italian soccer jersey and a pair of trainers just ran like an idiot at armed to the teeth French soldiers, and then got shot, and then they found in his bag, they found a machete and they found this and all that. When will people wake up, Kevin? What will it take for people to look at it and look again at the news and go, Ah, come on. You don't expect me to buy this every time. Or will people just continue to keep buying it, Kevin?
Well, Richie, there does seem to be, on the surface anyway, a backlash against Trump in the mainstream media. So there's a little part of me that maybe hasn't given up hope completely that they might actually do their jobs at some point and expose a big false flag in a timely way. You know, with 9/11, for example, the mainstream media did report all sorts of facts that are just so damning to the official story, but they never put them in context and they never really made it obvious and unavoidable for their readers that this is what was going on. For example, the German media, the biggest German media, all did report about the magic passport of Mohammed Atta, which was discovered in Hamburg, I believe, by a good Samaritan burglar. Some guy burglarized an apartment, found this suitcase of Mohammed Atta's containing all sorts of incriminating information about him that was used for the whole 9/11 official story. And this burglar delivered the suitcase to the German police. And, you know, that's just the most absurd concocted story. And I think it was Der Spiegel that first reported this. And they even reported that the German police know that this was no burglar. This was an intelligence agent. And the only question is, which intelligence agency? That was all reported by Der Spiegel. And then they put it in their book about 9/11, which doesn't even question the official story. And you know, there's the other magic suitcase of Mohammed Atta, the one that was planted on the plane, the commuter flight from Portland, Maine to Boston, Massachusetts, that Atta supposedly took on the morning of 9/11. He made that, you know, why he would take a transfer flight rather than just flying out of Boston. He was in Boston the day before. Why didn't he just fly out of Boston? No, he had to drive up to Portland, Maine and catch a commuter flight. Anyway, his suitcase goes on the commuter flight, and then for no evident reason, it just happens to not make the transfer to doomed Flight 11. So Atta supposedly, according to the official story, goes into the Trey Tower in a big fireball, but his suitcase is magically discovered at Boston's Logan Airport, full of incriminating evidence, including his ludicrous last will and testament that begins not with Bismillah, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, which is the way Muslims begin things, but rather, in the name of God, myself, and my family. That's what they reported. This is so ludicrous, and yet this is the only source of evidence for the official story. That's where they got the 19 names, although it was the wrong 19 names for the first few days. And the media just won't touch this stuff. But if Trump tries something like this, maybe they will touch it. There's a part of me that says, look, these people in the media and a lot of the political class here in the U.S. they're freaking out about Trump. They know what he's capable of. He's not subtle at all. And so maybe if he tries something, or if, you know, the people behind him try something, the folks who aren't on board with it in the mainstream will push back. I certainly hope so, and that's one of the reasons I keep doing the work I'm doing, in hopes that they won't keep getting away with this stuff.
Brilliant, Kev. My friend and colleague Jean Ann Crowley, who is a very good actress, tweets this, or emails this, I should say. I think they began using more and more crisis actors because of mothers. After 9/11, the mothers of people who had really died just wouldn't give up, which really annoyed the powers that be and threatened their story, in inverted commas, because they were relentless in pursuit of the truth, mothers, because mothers never give up, and as we know, that can be quite annoying. That's an excellent point, that, as to why they might begin to use crisis actors. And talking about crisis actors, the guy at Sandy Hook was laughing and joking with the camera, with people, just before he comes on camera to talk about his son, and then his demeanour completely changes, and he goes into this very sorrowful speech to the media. Keep the tweets and emails coming in. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. Kevin Barrett is our guest. Go to at Truth Jihad. And Kevin, give us the link to your radio show, by the way.
Well, you can find my radio show and everything else I do pretty much by way of truthjihad.com. That's all run together, Truth Jihad. And, you know, Richie, you mentioned that, you know, the Ed Plausible performance by the Sandy Hook victim, victim's father. Well, you know, we have a similar case with the Orlando shooting. That was the basis of my most recent edited book, which is called Orlando False Flag, The Clash of Histories. So Orlando False Flag, you can find that on the Internet. And one of the many items indicating that that was another of these staged provocations is the laughing policeman. Remember the laughing policeman of Orlando?
The laughing policeman, yeah.
Yeah, they're having a very somber sort of funeral ceremony honoring the fallen in this worst massacre in the history of Orlando. And they all pretty much have the right face for that, or close enough anyway, except for the one guy who's like laughing and nudging and winking, and, you know, maybe he wasn't aware that he was on camera or what, but it's quite telling.
It's quite telling, Kev, it is. So truthjihad.com, follow Kev, it's at truthjihad. This is very important stuff. I'm going to read a few tweets, and let me just scroll down there. Some of you have been tweeting the photographs of the fake, the fake leg, the Boston bombing, that famous picture of the guy in the wheelchair, which for me gave the game away.
Yeah, it's Carlos.
And that's right, Kevin, thanks. I used to be very, very reticent to acknowledge that these things were, you know, basically what they are, because I was worried at one stage about, you know, losing, not so much losing the audience, but that it would be difficult for people to listen to the program. And we're always trying to get people who ordinarily think we're crazy to listen to us. And I was very reluctant to talk about crisis actors. There was a time when I wouldn't talk about it, in fact. I never censored anybody at all, but I wouldn't go there. And if anybody went there, I would just, you know, I would kind of be quiet on that. But Dee tweets, Kevin is a fantastic guest. This is proper information. Mark tweets, it's the old phrase, you can elect but never select the candidates. That's absolutely right. They give you a choice every single time. Fluffles tweets, I had a court summons once, but I had no loo roll. Honest fact. Richie there says Fluffles. Himanshi tweets out pictures of the same woman used. Apparently, I don't know if this is true, but they might have used the same woman to be a crisis actor at Sandy Hook and Boston. I don't know if that's true. Kevin, how much do we have to be careful that when these false flag staged events happen, that the system behind them throws out crazy stuff as well, in the hope that we jump on it and use it as evidence, when in fact it isn't evidence, and then they can point the finger and say, look at those crazy bastards, Kevin Bowers and Richie Allen and David Icke. How much of that do we have to be aware of?
Well, a lot of it, and it's worse than that, Richie, actually. Not only are they putting out completely crazy, untrue stuff for us to latch onto so they can discredit us when we simply, you know, point out what it looks like, but they actually do things in such a way that if you tell the truth about it, it sounds crazy. So it's a really tough situation to be in. You know, and one of those things that they may very well be actually doing that sounds crazy and keeps us marginalized when we talk about it, indeed, is this crisis actors thing that you're talking about. Just by talking about these apparent crisis actors, they have a great propaganda approach. All they have to do is say that we are dishonoring these victims, and we are, you know, really hurting them, and it's so cruel, and we're taunting the victims. This is what Posner has been doing. This Posner guy, who is the father of Noah Posner, the Sandy Hook victim, or whatever you want to call him. I'm not 100% sure in most of these cases, so I'm not going to start saying, yeah, I know that this guy didn't get killed. I don't know for sure, but that Posner guy really looks suspicious to me, and he's been used as the point man for the pushback against people who are questioning Sandy Hook, and indeed for the whole truth movement, really. And it's, you know, he's the gift that keeps on giving for the propagandists. And just today's Los Angeles Times, I believe it is, there's a big story about how terrible it is for poor Mr. Posner. It's bad enough to lose your child in a massacre, but when the crazy conspiracy theorists start taunting you, it's even worse. And so this is their favorite propaganda technique, and they use this to fire a fully tenured professor in Florida, James Tracy. They got him involved in back and forth with Posner, and they were able to use that to make it look as though this evil, crazy James Tracy was dishonoring and taunting this poor father who'd lost his kid at Sandy Hook. So we have to be careful about this, and that's one of the reasons I go a little bit easy on the crisis actor thing myself. I don't want to hand the other side any easy propaganda, but at the same time, you still have to tell the truth as you see it. You know, another example, actually, of this was that whole story about the guy, James Wesley Howell, who was arrested after the Orlando massacre in Los Angeles. He turned himself into the Los Angeles police. He had a trunk full of weapons and bombs. He was going to massacre people at the gay pride parade right after the Sandy Hook massacre the Orlando massacre in Florida. And then he saw that Omar Mateen, the patsy in the Orlando massacre, had been killed, and he was afraid he was going to be killed too, so he turned himself into police, and then the FBI took him and he disappeared. So that was the story that came out right after the Orlando massacre, and I did report that in my edited book, Orlando False Flag. But I reported it with a certain arm's length distance, like we don't really know what the facts are about this yet. This is just what's been reported. As it turns out, James Wesley Howell has indeed been treated normally. He wasn't kidnapped and disappeared by the FBI, and it's not at all clear that the story that where he said he and Omar Mateen trained with the CIA to do these massacres is true. That actually looks like it very likely was a planted story designed to make us look bad. One of the many items of evidence, these false leads that they throw out there. So long story short, Richie, they're not only doing crazy things that make us look crazy if we talk about them, but then they're also throwing out false leads for us. So our work is cut out for us.
Yeah, because they're not stupid. You know, evil, sick, and bent, you know, bent as in corrupt as they are, they're not stupid. D tweets, Richie, ask Kevin, has he seen a new TV program broadcast on CBS which attempts to reinforce the mainstream narrative on Sandy Hook and 9/11, etc. I wasn't aware of it, Kev, but apparently CBS are running, according to Dee, a series of programs designed to remind people that these were seriously bad things that happened. Are you aware of that?
No, I haven't caught those, but thank you for letting me know. I'll look into that.
I mean, we saw the BBC did Conspiracy Files here in the UK, which was a disgrace. It was an affront to journalism. They did 7/7, they did September the 11th, amongst one or two other things, and purported to be a serious and a very fair and objective examination of the facts. And of course, they were just hit pieces on everybody associated with the 9/11 truth movement. They were hit pieces on everybody asking questions about the 7th of July. You're never going to get, I mean, when you hear CBS is going to have a serious look at Sandy Hook, it's just absolute garbage. It's going to be a hit piece on people like Wolfgang Halbig, who I've had on programs for the last few years, TV in London here. I've turned Wolfgang upside down, and I can only conclude the man is as honest as the day is long. A school safety inspector nationally, a highway patrol officer, from his home, from his living room, from his den, with a beer in his hand, he looked at Sandy Hook and he thought it stank, and he's come out and he's asking questions about it ever since. There's no way these programs are going to do a proper investigative piece on these things. They're just going to try and make guys like Wolfgang Halbig, guys like Kevin Barrett, and others look like idiots. That's what they do, Kev, right?
Oh, yeah, and worse, they actually get people fired from their jobs, as happened to James Tracy. And now we've seen Tony Hall suspended from his teaching job at the University of Lethbridge for asking hard questions about these kinds of issues. We've seen Joy Kariga fired at Oberlin College for simply mentioning my book on social media. So you're not even supposed to acknowledge that this material exists. And to me, that's not what the academy is for. You know, the Western academy, you know, we're supposedly an enlightenment culture. We're supposed to be using critical thinking to take apart the social myths and to expose the powers that be. That's what I was brought up as. You know, they told me that was my job. That's one of the reasons I went into the academy, was to do that. And now it appears that these various hoaxes are being created precisely by these neoconservatives who don't believe in the Enlightenment. They don't believe in having an open academy. They believe that public myths, as Philip Zelikow calls them, should be inculcated in the population. People should be brainwashed by these myths, and that the elite, that is the neocons, should be the only people who know what's really going on. So I think they're systematically taking down critical thinking and free reporting, independent journalism, and especially the free academy, and they're terrorizing professors into towing the line.
You know what, Kev? Final word on this, because we're just out of time. Everything you described there is as eloquently as only you can, from where you come from, I should say, leads to what you have in France at the moment, which is martial law. The French are quite happily going along about their business alongside the Seine in Paris, and in inner city Paris, going about their business, surrounded by thousands and thousands of soldiers, quite happily, Kev. That's what it leads to. That sort of brainwashing is martial law, a police state. And imagine, you'd never have believed, and people can say what they want about the French, I know my history, I know what the French are like. The French are incredible at standing up to authority and not taking it. They are acquiescing, Kev, to martial law, right?
It looks that way. It's really sad. There are some dissident voices. It was great to see that Garrett Coleman, the Irishman who's been ensconced in Paris for quite some time, got more than 1 million hits almost instantly when he called out that November 2015 Paris false flag on RT. And there are a number of other brave voices of truth coming out of France, although I don't agree with all of them. Like, Thierry Meyssan actually likes Trump at this point. So, you know, anybody can get misguided. But yeah, the population in France is just as badly brainwashed as the less educated population here in the U.S. So maybe those brilliant French intellectuals that we all admire from afar are not quite as smart as we always thought they were.
Kevin, I could talk to you all night, mate. I always say that whenever we've spoken. We could go on forever. Thanks so much for your time today. Go to truthjihad.com, folks. You'll find Kevin's shows there. He's outstanding, and you can read him at Veterans Today. And do follow him on Twitter. I follow him there, even though he doesn't follow me back. I'm only joking, I don't care about things like that. It's that Truth Jihad on Twitter. But then again, I must do if I mention it. No, I don't.
Okay, I'll go follow you right now.
I just throw that in there as a gag, Kev. We can't be slaves to this social media nonsense. Brilliant to chat with you. We will, of course, do it again real soon. Thank you, my friend. Have a great day.
Okay, thank you.
Brilliant. Kevin Barrett on the line with us there from Wisconsin.